It's time for Making Democracy Work, a weekly program produced in cooperation with the League of Women Voters of Southwest Missouri. Your host today is Wei-Ping Chen.
Good morning. Our guest today is Paula Rector. Paula teaches in the Department of Criminology at Missouri State University. Her expertise is in domestic violence and gender, and this is a topic we'll be discussing today.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Paula. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how you would define and categorize domestic violence and what is the domestic violence situation in our community.
I would define domestic violence as a coercive control in an intimate partner relationship. This takes many forms, including physical violence, sexual violence, sexual coercion, economic control, which is one that people often don't understand what that is. And economic control is where one person mm-hmm. really uses the economic situation to their advantage and really uses it as a way to isolate mm-hmm. and really reduce the choices and life choices another person has in mm-hmm. an attempt to isolate and control them. Mm-hmm. And of course, emotional and psychological abuse is a component of domestic violence as well. Mm-hmm. In terms of the rates of domestic violence, right. we have issues at both the local and statewide level. Mm-hmm. In Missouri, unfortunately, we rank pretty high in mm-hmm. the level of domestic violence. And in fact, we typically are in the top 10 of intimate partner homicides in our state of the number of women killed mm-hmm. by an intimate partner. Mm-hmm. Within Greene County, we have unfortunately as well had very high rates mm-hmm. historically and continue to have even with some recent declines. Mm-hmm. We typically have one of the highest rates of any county mm-hmm. or the second highest, even higher than other rural communities mm-hmm. and metropolitan communities, including higher rates than Kansas City counties and St. Louis counties as well. Hmm. Then within Springfield specifically, to right. get very local, domestic violence arrests make up a significant portion of our persons offenses or violent offenses mm-hmm. that do affect our community as well. So right. both at the state, county, and local level, we're mm-hmm. dealing with very high rates of domestic mm-hmm. violence.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned about women. Mm-hmm. And then of course, that we know domestic violence issues involve both men and women. But yes. how does gender play in this situation?
Gender plays a really interesting role when it comes to domestic violence. You know, we typically have always thought about domestic violence involving a male offender and a female victim, and that still fits the majority of domestic violence. However, there is a lot of ongoing research that shows that both men and women do engage in domestic mm-hmm, violence, mm-hmm. and gender does play a role because what we see is in the forms of domestic violence that do not result in quite a serious injury. Mm-hmm. For example, recent CDC research has found that 50% of men and women both mm-hmm. are reporting psychological and emotional abuse within their relationships. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As well, when we get, though, to the more serious forms of domestic violence, that and what I mean by serious are those that would result in serious physical injuries, that's where we see the biggest difference in gender. Mm-hmm. And what we see is that men are more likely to engage in frequent and violence that causes serious physical harm, including punching, strangulation, mm-hmm. using objects, throwing mm-hmm. a partner against, you know, a wall or something of that nature. Not to mention as well that the strangulation is an important piece. This mm-hmm. is new in the literature in the last several years, mm-hmm. and this is something that is almost exclusively male in terms mm-hmm. of the rates of perpetration. Mm-hmm. In addition, sexual assault and coercion and rape are much more likely committed by male abusers than they mm-hmm. are female mm-hmm. abusers. And of course, intimate partner homicides. Yes. While most abusers do not kill their intimate partner, it certainly is always a threat, and it's something that male abusers are much more likely to do than women are in terms of perpetration. Mm-hmm. One area, though, that I do want to point out where we're seeing emerging literature and research is the fact that actually it's men that are less likely to report domestic mm-hmm, violence. So mm-hmm. both men and women are hesitant to report domestic violence to authorities, but men are actually even less likely to report mm-hmm. domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the services for domestic violence are certainly very female-centered, yes. and it can be challenging for men to obtain services that they need.
That's true. Well, our program here is Making Democracy Work. Why is it so important to tackle domestic violence in light of promoting democracy?
So when I think about democracy, I think that the importance is looking at the fact that I believe it's a basic human right to live a life free of abuse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that in particular for anyone involved in this situation, but for women, we do see that domestic violence is correlated with PTSD, mm-hmm. other mental mm-hmm. health, substance abuse, and even homelessness. And there are many short and long-term impacts to individuals who are impacted mm-hmm. by domestic violence, but there are also many community impacts that affect communities' yeah. overall health by mm-hmm. the rates of domestic violence.
Absolutely.
And if we think of things like days of missed work and mm-hmm. children not being able to go to school and being mm-hmm. chronically truant, certainly the impacts on children who are witnessing mm-hmm. and living in homes where domestic violence is present causes long-term impacts for the overall community health. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important when we think about this as a in terms of a democratic nation that we think about mm-hmm. prevention, we think about victim services, and we also, of course, think about offender accountability, mm-hmm. that these are all very important. Mm-hmm. You know, at a national level, the Violence Against Women Act is the single most important federal legislation to address mm-hmm. issues specifically regarding domestic violence and sexual assault. And it is right now in Congress and being debated as there are attempts to reauthorize mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. So to give people the opportunity to live a life free from abuse and for us to support those who are willing to support prevention and victim mm-hmm. services and offender mm-hmm. accountability really, in my mind, is a hallmark of what we're trying to achieve in a democratic society.
So how can we identify and deal with domestic violence situation, and where can we find help?
There's many ways to identify a domestic violence situation. We often think about that we would see physical bruises. And mm-hmm. while certainly that could be an aspect that someone has physical symptoms or injuries that are noticeable as a way for us to identify that. But oftentimes this is not the case. Abusers can be very creative and get very good at hiding this, and not to mention victims as well. So we do sometimes see things like when someone wears long sleeves and mm-hmm. heavy jacket or turtleneck in the middle of, you know, our hot summer, you know, repeatedly. And again, that alone might not be an indication, but that with other indication. And so very oftentimes, people who are abusive are not abusive to other people, and they're not abusive outside of intimate relationships. Half of all abusers do not physically assault or hurt anybody else, but half do. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that is a concern as well. But what we see is there are signs, and that's one of the things I like to really try to encourage people to learn more about, of what are the signs of domestic violence and intimate partner violence. And this includes anxiety and sensing that a person is very anxious when they're talking about a partner mm-hmm. or if that partner comes around. Mm-hmm. If you work or you're out with friends and they're getting mm-hmm. repeated phone calls and texts and the person is wondering where they are, and the person's trying to make a lot of excuses maybe for their behavior, or they just want to know where I'm at, or if someone's showing up unexpectedly and the person, mm-hmm. you know, your friend or family member didn't know that they were going to be there. If the person is very concerned about letting the other person know, their partner, where they are at all times, and that's very important. That's definitely what we would call a red flag mm-hmm. For a coercive and controlling relationship. And I think part of what we really need to do as well is believe people when they tell us, mm-hmm. Because oftentimes we do expect to see physical symptoms of this or physical signs of this. If we don't see that, it can be hard for us to understand that this is occurring, especially when a lot of times these people can be very good at manipulating other people, and they have what's often referred to as the Jekyll and, you know, yes. and Hyde situation. And so it's really important to believe people. And the other thing I think is to be supportive in a way that lets another person know there are resources in our community, that I am a safe person for you to come to, but also not to create ultimatums to a victim mm-hmm. and listen to a victim, not to be just one more person who is telling this victim what to do and how they should live their life and what to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's perfectly fine to voice concerns mm-hmm. For people. I myself have been in situations where I have looked another woman in the eye and said, I'm afraid for your life mm-hmm. and I really want to work with you on how to do this. But there are ways about this, and it's really important that victims leave a relationship in a safe manner. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we just say, leave, 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 which of course we want people to leave these situations. But at the same time, when people leave is the most dangerous time. And so it's so important that we don't focus solely on leaving, mm-hmm. that we focus on safely mm-hmm. leaving and what that's going to look like afterward. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of resources that people can look at mm-hmm. for safety planning as mm-hmm. well mm-hmm. and how to do that in a safe way. Mm-hmm. And not to mention the amount of resources we have in Springfield as well. Mm-hmm. And certainly Harmony House, mm-hmm. The Victim Center, mm-hmm. The Family Justice Center mm-hmm. are really wonderful places to get assistance that mm-hmm. are free, and they do not require to be reported to police for a victim to get services. And so I think if people know about the services, they may not know how to handle a situation, but knowing where to send someone yes. can be life-changing and can be life-saving.
Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing the information with us. You've been listening to Making Democracy Work, sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Southwest Missouri. You can find this program and others in the Making Democracy Work series at KSMU org. This is Hui Ping Chin. Thank you for listening.